Welcome to the Shutdown Fullcast, the internet's only college football podcast. We're here to review the week that was, and that week included, by the way, everybody coming out to Rudyard's in Houston. Come to our live show brought to you by Banner Society, our home, our community, our culture,
our shell corporation.
You know what's different about this show and the live show?
Hmm.
We remembered to say Banner Society during this show, which I'm almost positive we didn't do in Houston.
BannerSociety.com. BannerSociety.com. Banner Society. Your home, your community, your people on the internet for everything college football.
If that sounds like an accusation, it absolutely is.
But thank you to everybody who came out for the show. We've had very, very, very good crowds everywhere we have went, but I don't think anything can quite compare to a good and semi-liquored up Houston crowd.
That was my favorite crowd so far.
Yeah. I mean, maximum Texas, yes. Additionally, we really couldn't see anything from the stage. So anything shouted out or yelled at us, it was all a surprise. We had no idea what was coming.
It was good because we got not threatened per se. Well, no, the Texas Tech thing was a threat.
Yeah. You didn't.
Did that Kentucky fan make it home okay?
I had people demanding I rank UGK ahead of Outkast, which, sorry, I might not leave this room alive in Houston, but it's just not going to happen. And then I had drunk Texas Tech girl wondering why we weren't talking about Texas Tech.
Why aren't you talking about Texas Tech?
And somehow I Ryan was like,
y'all fuck off.
Ryan had, I didn't say I liked or disliked her. I said I thought she might murder me. These things are not mutually exclusive. But somehow Ryan had vacated the area for both of these.
Because I'm smart. All of these things happened, of course, during Q&A, which you don't get to listen to if you weren't at the show. So maybe we're making it all up. Prove us wrong.
Dark match.
Probably.
Dark match.
It did make me sad because we got the question about somebody asking what coaching staff should be in Russian 5-on-5 MMA, and I proposed Boston College, and then a night later, well, lost the game.
I mean, 24 points would be a lot in MMA, right?
Is that true? I don't know if that's true.
I mean, I feel like that. What that means? That means you won 2.5 rounds.
Okay,
right?
I guess that's true. I don't know how that works with five on five, but
yeah. I'm sure it's the same as boxing.
Okay. Spencer, can I get some podcast business?
Podcast business? What's that business? Podcast business? What's that business?
Okay, that's good.
It's a tiger, and it's also business.
But that tiger is not lonely, just to be clear.
Nope. Mike is not lonely.
We're not going to be lonely either, goddammit, because we're coming to Charlotte and Jacksonville, the two places you go for friendship and
fitness.
Organ theft, respectively. Mm. Fitness, organ theft is a form of fitness, if you think about it.
It is. When you play Civilization, remember, you can be the Mongols,
mm-hmm.
the French, Americans, ancient Greeks,
or Duval!
Charlotte, or Duval. Duval.
I would love that Civ patch. You can just play as Duval.
Build vape shop.
Yeah, so we're coming to Charlotte Friday. I'm going to make sure I get these dates right. Friday, October 4th, I believe that one is. And then we're coming to Jacksonville Friday, November 1st before the cocktail party. Do we have venues booked for either of these yet? No.
So roam those cities on those dates until you find us.
Yeah. Treat it like a GTA mission where you have to drive around and at a certain time. We'll call you. How do we get your phone? Not important.
How'd the cocktail party end up in November?
The way Halloween sits. Like, I think that's the calendar's just weird this year.
Yeah. But yeah, that's where we're going to be. If you have recommendations or if you are affiliated with a venue, this is literally how we ended up at the Ann Arbor Library, which was great. Email us at shutdown.fullcast@vox.com.
Fortunately, Jacksonville doesn't have a library.
They may. You can have porn in one. Actually, the Ann Arbor one kind of did too. So
also, it had 9.5 weeks.
Address, yeah. So now no one will know where to send it.
shutdown.fullcast@voxmedia.com. Or find us on Reddit or DM one of us. Whatever.
Don't DM me.
Please don't DM Holly. We'll try to get tickets up for these. I don't know. When we do.
Nice.
I'm not making any promises after this last one. Nope. Listen, absolutely not.
We got in. We got out. Spencer had a horrible rash. A non-contagious rash. I want to emphasize.
So far, a non-contagious rash. Everybody check your legs.
Medically cleared. I think it would be a fitting tribute to this podcast overall ethos and existence if we became the focal point in a CDC cluster study.
I do like that we called this your flu game on the mic at the show so as not to alarm anyone in attendance, that it was actually your full body rash game.
Full body rash game!
I think that's thematically appropriate for this week of college football because it was not blood week. Just for everyone wanted to know, unclear why, because it's not like that many ranked teams lost, and the ones that did were not particularly highly ranked. But I don't know, maybe Kansas beating Boston College early had everybody primed for this. But I am willing
antsy for blood.
But I am willing to consider this potentially a full body rash week.
I don't even know if it's full body.
A partial body, like it was rash week in the sense that, like, a lot of what you could see, you were like, get that out. No, that's not good. Stop it.
It's, you know what? I would also put it this way, if things went super wrong for Kentucky, definitely a full body rash week.
Oh, man.
That's a normal week.
Yeah. Jason has a different term for this, which I think is preferable anyway.
More generous, certainly.
So our most excited colleague do we dare call him a colleague? Is that sort of promoting ourselves to his level?
We're colleagues. I think.
Yeah.
Who are we talking about?
Our devoted colleague Gus Johnson.
Oh,
with whom we are equally as prominent and known. There's Fox is doing this thing. Big Noon Saturday is their name for the game they are putting on their flagship channel at noon. It's a good idea. You don't need to put that on at 8 o'clock up against the bigger game on ABC. Just punt. Punt to noon. That's what's happening in the noon games anyway, is punting. So for whatever reason, when Gus Johnson says Big Noon Saturday, it sounds like Big Nude Saturday. And Spencer and I were very, very excited about this basically all day Saturday.
Yeah,
and
it sounded like you maybe had a little cold.
If so, I hope he keeps it going. I hope he feels better, but I hope he keeps it going. And I noticed lots of other people enjoyed it as well. So I'm hoping we can embrace Big Nude Saturday, this as sort of the foundational introductory Big Nude Saturday, which, I mean, it fit the day's events. There was, everyone just sort of played like they weren't wearing clothes, if you can picture what that means.
Or like they were scrambling to put clothes on. Like or, you yeah. had just walked in on
trying to
them.
Get off the stage.
You had just walked in on them naked, and they're like, oh, God, ah, jeez.
This will never be the same, will it?
I don't know. Iowa was playing like they were just proud to be luxuriating, just wallowing around in it.
I will tell you that if you have ever been to a nude beach, there are two ways people lay. One, demure. Legs close to each other. The second way people lay is for all the glory of the Lord to be seen in the human form from whence it came.
Time to aerate this bitch.
Yeah. Iowa, given how proud Iowa was, they had sunscreen in places you never thought sunscreen could or should go.
But they didn't need it because it rained all day.
Nude in the rain.
Yeah. In Ames, in the filthy water.
You don't get more naked than punting in a key situation with a 1-point lead with, I believe, a minute and 30 seconds to go, like it was the swaggiest thing you could possibly do. And it turns out it was the swaggiest thing they could possibly do. Because unlike the rest of us, Iowa has played Iowa State every single year since the dawn of time. Don't correct me on that. Dawn of time is like 1903 with intermittent interruptions.
Spencer's a creationist.
Yeah. But the because they knew that Iowa State would do something extremely Iowa State-ish, i.e. having, I believe, the gunner take out the returner with a solid hit. I mean, a chest-to-chest obliteration of his own man for reasons that neither Matt Campbell nor God can explain.
Kirk Ferentz won by punting. And then I sort of imagine after he did that, he just turned around like, see, any questions? Right? Like, what have I been telling you all along? The gospel of the punt, you doubters.
Give it to the other people and let them effort. It will go badly for them because they are trying. Football's an amazing instructor of life. Don't achieve. Just punt.
Or if you're Pitt, just punt directly into the goalpost. It's kind of a punt.
Can we talk about the dumb shit Pat Narduzzi said about that decision after the game?
I don't even think I saw it.
Okay, so this is a game in which late in the game, like midway through the fourth quarter, I want to say, maybe like 8 minutes left. I'm just guessing, but whatever. Pitt has the ball. First and goal on the one. Memory serves, they go incomplete pass, quarterback keeper that gets stuffed for no gain, incomplete pass, where if the quarterback had gotten the ball out quicker, probably should have been a touchdown. Fourth and goal on the one. They've made no progress. They're down 7 points at this juncture, and they decide to attempt literally the shortest possible field goal. They miss this field goal, which is funny in and of itself, but after the game, and, you know, they go on to lose. And after the game, people say, you know, why did you decide to kick a field goal there on the one against, you know, against a team you really hadn't seen a lot of offensive progress against? And Pat Narduzzi's answer was, well, you have to score twice to win the game at that point. And we're not playing for overtime. Like, that was the twisted fucking logic. To take the far more conservative choice is that he was being ballsy and not playing for overtime by deciding to forego the chance at a touchdown. And look, even if you think that there's some merit to that logic, that yes, you have to score twice, when you're down seven, one of them definitely has to be a touchdown, and you're at the one. So why wouldn't you try to make that the score? Why wouldn't you or if you don't get it, try to get a safety. That also is a score.
Do we know about 2-point conversions?
Mm-hmm. He may not. Mm-hmm. Pitt may not at this point.
Yeah. I mean, really, also consider this, that in a game where you've only scored, 10 points total that entire game, you're treating the luxury of getting a TD like it's something one can pick up at the Wawa, right? Like you can just, oh, yeah, we can go down and do that. No, you can't. You're 3 feet away.
And they couldn't. And true to form, they couldn't.
That's not something you're built to do. Pitt only got into that position through a circus catch. Through some astonishing work.
On fourth down, I believe, right?
Yeah. Yeah, a circus catch on fourth down. You should read the writing on the wall and understand your very proximity to the end zone, that's a low probability event to begin with.
It was like... I said this in the top whatever, but the fascinating thing about Pitt is that when the super weapon fires, it's not actually a super weapon where you're like, oh my God, all the pieces came together and they all acted in concert and obliterated that is not true. What happens is Pitt still fumbles all over itself, gets its dick stuck in its own zipper, shits its own pants, but still despite all those things, still wins. Like, there is no version where it's like, oh man, Pitt just moved up and down the field and played strong defense and didn't make mistakes, and that's why they won. It's like, nope, They still did all those things, but they accidentally set you on fire.
The greatest part about this, Ryan, you really did have the best way of putting the Penn State-Pitt relationship, right?
The idea of being sat next to a chatty person on an airplane.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Terrible thing to be. Really funny to watch, though.
Penn State fans hate this. It's great because, you know, anybody who's not involved with this game on a personal level is like, we got to keep playing this rivalry. These games are close and they're intense and they matter, you know, blah, blah, blah. And they may be right, but every Penn State fan on your timeline when this game is played on Saturday is like, please, you can have. I'll give you $50,000 of my own money to never play this rivalry again. They want nothing to do with it, and I don't blame them. It always sucks, even when they win.
Yeah, because Pitt puts everyone on the struggle bus, right? Like, hey, we can fly, guys. Nope! On board the struggle bus! Like, that's what... they make everybody. Like, you know, it's more... You know, the only thing that's like close to as frustrating as being Pitt in that situation and watching Narduzzi line up on 4th and 1 to kick, being Penn State and being like, God, I can't believe I have to put up with this shit.
And I can't believe this is why we're going to win because of that.
I cannot believe we're barely beating these idiots.
Yeah, like we only scored 17 points in this garbage.
James Franklin tried very hard to keep Pitt in the game at the end, too.
But James Franklin clock management, like, all right, everybody, first of all, aluminum goes in the microwave. All right, yeah, sure. All right, 3 minutes, that should be enough.
I don't know. I think that's Penn State supporting the rivalry in its own way.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It's like Penn State selling Pitt's moves. Like, oh, wow, I'm staggered. I can't think straight. I'm so disoriented.
What a punch.
Devastating blow. Yeah, that oh my gosh, that 4-yard gain, it has me staggered.
James Franklin, from about the 4-minute like warning, the 4-minute mark in a game.
The 4-minute warning should be a thing in a Penn State game. Just for it James Franklin. Should be if
James
benefit.
Franklin is around.
The clock doesn't even stop. There's just like a siren.
You know how there's a get back coach?
Yeah.
Right? There should be an abduction coach who just takes James Franklin away from his headset when the 4-minute mark happens. James Franklin, he's good at getting a program moving in the right direction and recruiting. And when it comes to time management, he should be locked in an equipment locker.
And now Keegan-Michael Key comes out to coach the remainder of the game for Penn State.
And just somebody there with like the chart, right? Like, okay, yeah, take a timeout now.
Yep.
Take a time. Good, good. That would be a better replacement for James Franklin once he decides to like, once he starts, hey, let me cook. Go for a 2-point conversion. We're on defense. I know.
It's chess. It's not.
Speed chess. Speed chess boxing.
My knight uses his lasers. That's not a thing.
Dan Mullen has a little bit of that, too. Like, a little bit of that, like, I'm going to make things happen. Like, go for two. You failed. Go for two again. Failed. Kick. No, you should go for two. Failed. No, don't run it out. Like, the end of that Kentucky game.
God. I finally figured out what the Florida experience, what the Florida side of this rivalry is, especially when Florida wins. You know, in a tennis match, when there's a really good rally and... one player hits the tape and the ball bounces, like slides over and just falls, and they win the point on that bullshit, and they sort of raise their hand sheepishly to be like, yeah, sorry, that sucks, but also it counts, and I'm not saying it doesn't. That's Florida beating Kentucky. It's just, yeah, all of that was bad and really took away every good thing you did. For no good reason, but also it counts. It's a W for me, just so we're clear. But sorry.
In this case, it would be that, plus I won the match and later discovered I had a torn ACL from the match, right? Because Florida lost their starting quarterback.
That's a particularly unfortunate metaphor for this game.
A comparison, but hey, let's just keep going. Hey, next man up. Next metaphor up. We're just going to keep going. Because Kyle Trask had to finish the game after Felipe Franks had his ankle dislocated during a collision at the line of scrimmage. And Kyle Trask did great. He's the backup. Everyone loves him. Everyone always loves the backup, right? Dan Mullen has announced that both Kyle Trask and Emory Jones will see time. I think that means that Kyle Trask will pass and Emory Jones will run. And we're all the way back to 2006 again. Woo! Retro! Retro Gator football, y'all! Yeah, but we beat Kentucky, which that puts us on a one-game win streak against Kentucky. Go Gators!
I appreciated Jason bringing us down memory lane for all the things that were real in our world last time Florida beat Kentucky.
I just thought maybe... Yeah, maybe
people like, didn't
remember what the world was
like. I was going to say that that would be when, in 2017?
Yep.
The last time this happened?
Yep. Good math. Good job.
Oh, hey.
Thank you. I can hear you. Think, by the way, Uncle Cracker had not been invited to perform at homecoming for Florida. That'd be Uncle Cracker, who I believe has pled to a second degree sexual offense in Florida. That's good. That's the guy we invited for homecoming. Uncle Cracker.
Gonna go ahead and check. First of all, he's much older than you would think.
Uncle Cracker? I'm putting him at 48.
45. I
mean, 45? Okay.
Uncle alone, that's 20 years. Cracker? Cracker's another 30.
I'm not. Oh, yeah. He was indeed arrested in 2007 on a second degree sex offense charge, pled guilty to a lesser charge, and sentenced to a year of probation.
Did it seem like this week it was kind of El Asico broke contained this week? We had the Iowa thing. We had El Asico itself was maximum El Asico. We had Florida doing all that shit.
Mm-hmm.
We also had Arizona State as Spencer.
What a magnificent football event. Nothing. Just seas of nothing.
Here are stats that Michigan State clearly beat Arizona State in during this game. Third down efficiency, they won 52% to 30%. Yards per play, they won 5.45 to 4.15. Major difference. Time of possession, they had over 7 minutes more in this game. The degree to which Michigan State fucked this up. Because everybody wants to talk about the end, and the end is a fuck-up in a lot of ways, on almost all sides, including, you know, on Michigan State's side, on the officiating side, on the kicker side, whatever. They missed... This is what they did when they crossed midfield all day. I went through and I added this up. If I fucked it up, well, go find another college football podcast. After they crossed midfield, the offense basically just, like, slowed way down. They ran 30 plays for 106 yards. That's 3.5 yards per play. They had a fumble, and including that one at the end of the game, they had 3 missed field goals. So, like, Arizona State's plan of, like, yeah, let them get on our side, and that's when we have all the traps. We'll home alone them, basically, with their own offense. It was just... terrible. Just terrible.
It is the slackeriest win probability chart I've ever seen, because after they kick the field goal to go up 3-0, a dominating 3-0 lead, it's like a gentle EKG hanging somewhere around the like 30-45% mark, mm-hmm. right? And then at the very end, Arizona State says, fine, I'll get up and do it. It goes like it just rockets to 100% in the last 3% of the graph. It's literally Herm Edwards being like, oh, you made me get out of my chair. Like they had, but which, by the way, I didn't really get to elaborate on this, but the way Arizona State won that game was how somebody who has never played a football game but is very good at video games wins that game, right? They're like, oh, you could just run the quarterback around? you can just throw the ball down there and maybe sometimes the guy catches it. Like on the last three plays or the last four plays, I think three of them were just were just Arizona State's quarterback. I believe Jaden Daniels, just him running, like, running right when everybody else went left, right? It was like bootleg. Oh, look, Michigan State's just leaving that open. I'm going to run over here. Look, wow, football's not hard. We could have done this the whole game. And then the part that's like the like topper, the little cake topper for me on this gigantic wedding cake of Michigan State misery is this, that they put 12 out there for the field goal. And I don't think it was a mistake. I think they were like, field goals are very important. We should put more men out there.
We need to maximize resources.
Yeah, block.
We need backup. We need backup.
Call in the National Guard. We're about to try a field goal. Like, if any team in America is
all hands on deck.
I know. Like, if any team in America thought that you could just have, like, a guest DJ during the field goal jam, it'd be Michigan State, right? Like, yeah, you get an extra person for those because they're super important.
We need 12 people out there because kickers aren't people.
There's 11 men and one boy. Well, I don't see the problem.
12 men on the field. Incorrect. Like, that's the best. I mean, Michigan State just sitting there flailing and attempting to effort their way into football excellence and dying and falling into a bottomless pit. That's this whole game. While Herm Edwards is just like, okay, fine. 3 minutes of work. We'll put in 3 minutes of work on offense and win this whole thing. A delight.
What's awesome is this is exactly how Michigan State prefers to win.
Yeah.
Michigan State got Michigan stated. Like, go look how many times Mark D'Antonio has done this exact thing to others. Not so fun now, is it?
Also,
it's also good because they lost this game last year because they blew Michigan State blew a fourth quarter lead. Arizona State came back, scored 13 points in the last frame, including a game-winning field goal at the end, lost 16-13. So Michigan State had to be going into being like, it's going to be different this year. And, well, it was. So.
What's the one knock on Michigan State for Michigan fans, too? Like, couldn't get into Michigan. Could not, like, just not quite there, right? And then what do they do in the last play of this game against Arizona State, the school that was the warning for parents who bought their way into USC, right? I don't want my kid to go to Arizona State. Arizona State counted correctly on the last play of the game, and Michigan State didn't. Oh, I'm finished.
Also on the list of Elasicoing, we had K-State winning a game in which K-State botched like 19 different punts, something like that.
And there's like fumbled an interception return as well.
Yeah, not exactly how we're used to seeing K-State win, but I think it's more entertaining than how we're used to seeing K-State win, so I'm in favor. We also saw Minnesota beat Georgia Southern, despite Georgia Southern in the final minutes running back, I think, a fumble and a field goal, both for touchdowns. Minnesota, of course, completing the idiot's gauntlet, as our entire Minnesota preview was Holly pointing out how stupid they are for scheduling these teams, but how much we appreciate them doing so for entertainment. And yeah, boy, did that deliver.
Definitely keep doing that, Minnesota. It was great for us.
I also like that they lived up to Holly's prediction by having to win all these games in incredibly stupid fashion as well.
Each one got more and more perilous. It was fantastic.
You don't want to schedule one of these teams, and they had three in a row. I feel bad for them, but also I don't ever want them to stop doing this.
It's like we said, hey, don't run with scissors, and PJ Fleck was like, fine, I got swords. Let's go!
But like stupid swords that you don't get any credit if you spear yourself with them.
Yeah,
like
LARPing swords.
This motherfucker's running around with like fireplace pokers. Like, you dipshit, you impaled yourself on a fireplace poker.
I will laugh if, because right now Minnesota sits at 3-0. That's a big accomplishment for Minnesota football, right?
Yeah.
Not the most competitive program over the last 50 years. Right? So it's a big deal for them being 3-0. And I had a few people salty with me on Twitter when I suggested that this record was somewhat fraudulent. I will laugh my ass off if I'm like, yeah, man, they just got this like weak, tricky part of their schedule. Now they're just going to get it handed to them in the Big Ten. If they go to the Rose Bowl this year.
hold on. Here are their next four games.
Okay.
They play on the road at Purdue. Then they host Illinois. And
win.
Then they host Nebraska.
Win.
And then they go to Rutgers.
Massive win.
Like, there is a not insubstantial chance that, especially, not just because, like, Purdue has been real up and down this year. Nebraska is capable of all things. Illinois, we thought was maybe good, and they lost to Eastern Michigan. And Rutgers is Rutgers. Like, there is a combination of these are theoretically beatable opponents, and they are all opponents who are prone to dumbass snake bitery, that Minnesota seems to have a monopoly on being the snake right now. Minnesota's
worked up an immunity to snake bites.
Yeah, I would not be surprised if that was the thing.
Danger Man Minnesota fears nothing now. If they go to the Rose Bowl, they're going to face like James Madison or something somehow.
They do a lot of things football-wise, by the way, which are very obviously smart things that other teams just don't do sometimes, right? Like their two-minute drive for the final score against Georgia Southern, it was nothing but five-yard outs. You know how many teams I saw mess up like a basic two-minute drill this weekend? All of them. You know who didn't? Minnesota, because they were like, five-yard out. The announcers are like, this is genius. How are they doing this? Five-yard out. Oh, it's what the defense gives up every time you go into prevent. Five-yard out. Like, watching Kentucky and Florida try to, like, fail at the same thing was astonishing. I'm like, Minnesota got it right. They just threw, like, 9 5-yard outs and boop. Oh, hey, look, we're in the end zone.
If you had to take Minnesota or Stanford to get to 8 wins this season, which
Minnesota.
One? Right?
Minnesota, please.
Isn't that fucking, like, and to be clear, that is equally because Stanford is fucking rough right now. But that's a very weird thing that nobody would have thought a month ago.
Like, tons of injuries. Like, that was, we will say that for the three Stanford fans who follow this podcast due to Ryan's one
bold leadership bold
cycle, one bold cycle of Stanford fandom. All right. If you're still listening, yes, you're very injured. That has made you awful. There are reasons for that awfulness, and most of them come down to injury because there is a plague of injuries cutting through Stanford right now. But man, that first half against UCF was not competitive. I mean that in terms of what was this one team doing on the field with the other team.
It sucks a little bit for UCF because Stanford is not going to be a good enough team this year for UCF to point to that and be like, see, that is, we proved it. We've done what you've asked and played a top team and beat them. Give us our, like, it's not going to work out this year for them. They have caught Stanford on realistically the one year in what, like the last 10 where Stanford like is a cusp bowl team. It feels like right now.
Pretty much, yeah. So, like, Stanford, you lost to USC about as badly as you did to UCF. And then USC is a team that loses to BYU. I mean, so, okay, UCF's about as good as BYU. That's what we learned there. So you're probably not making the playoff again, UCF. But, I mean, I think you're aware of that by now.
In the week, by the way, like, man, Clay Halton's timing is astonishing because in the week where your athletic director gets fired, but you have managed to take your team, right, which is supposed to start 0-2, you lose your starting quarterback, but then find a replacement who's going to be as good or even better than Keaton Slovis. Yeah, this is the week when you thought, oh, man, like, Clay Helton's going to do this. He's going to save his job. He's just going to – this is all going, like, against script. This is hilarious. And then – go to Provo and get your ass handed to you by BYU. Perfect. Well done, dude. Magnificent.
Let's see. We also had Virginia, I think, won an El Asico grade game. pretty weird, especially at the end where one of like three different games this weekend in which ACC officials just kind of decided time didn't exist.
Well, they were masters of time.
I think it's more like if you go back like 1,000 years ago and you're like, oh yeah, give me like 4 feet of bubble tape, bubble gum. And they're like, oh, well, our feet are, you know, this long.
Right. It's so whatever the king. That's how much. We measure bubble tape by whatever the king's foot is. Also, we have bubble tape.
Our king is 4 years old, so you're not getting very much bubble tape. And you're like, shit, you know, because you were so hungry. And that's all there was to eat back then.
Yep.
That's how the ACC measures time to Virginia's advantage.
Every reference in the Bible to manna, that's actually bubble tape.
That's why people were always trying to assassinate young emperors.
They wanted the bubble tape.
Yeah, they were just pissed off. It's how Jesus turned all those loaves into more loaves.
Yep. Oh, yeah, the loaves into Swedish fish.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
We're all very happy, but also really aggro from the sugar we've ingested.
Yeah, everyone got very sleepy around 8 o'clock. Yeah. Because they'd eaten nothing but sugar all day.
So much gelatin. Oh, the ACC network really has done a number on the officiating, though, because I think now they're like, we got a network, y'all. Just hit pause.
Time to show out.
No, yeah, we can show out. Also, we got DVR. So if we mess up this ruling, we can just go back.
We just go back, do it over.
The ACC, so through week three of the Power Five conferences, the ACC has the worst winning percentage and the and the fewest wins in non-conference play. They're 19-9. Like, and what is their best win right now?
Clemson over Texas A&M.
Okay.
Yeah, other than that one.
And the second is UNC beating South Carolina?
I think the second is Wake beating UNC.
Right, but, sorry.
Excuse me. That was not a conference game.
Right, that's his point. That's their best non-conference win.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, but is it like, I'm confused by the semantics behind this, because I would argue that this was played in some sort of negative zone where neither of them can count it.
Where it's not a conference win for anybody.
I think it's a perfect argument item, because you can both argue for and against the ACC's quality with it.
Sure. That's
so fair. I think we should have as many of these as possible. I'm also looking forward to in like November when you're like, you know, grr, the standings, grr, and everyone just forgets about this game. Because that'll happen a lot.
The Pac-12 is almost as bad. So far, the only Pac-12 teams that have not lost outside of the conference are Arizona State, Utah, which Utah sneakily might actually be a good team, especially because they have that season-opening win over a BYU team that has been pretty feisty, Cal, and the two Washington schools. Cal still has a road game against Ole Miss, and Washington still has to play the aforementioned BYU. So, like, it's very weird that these two conferences as a whole are quite similar to each other or have a lot of parallels. It's just that one has Clemson and the other one has, I don't know, insert team. Like, I really...
Arizona State.
The other one has Utah. It's the problem.
I think
what you're saying is that about 120 years ago, California should have tried to acquire the town of Clemson, South Carolina.
Correct. Yes.
I think it also speaks to the inability of anything in college football to do anything effectively in a group in any solid direction, yes. Right?
Yep.
And like the ACC has a great moment last year when they're flagship program right now hands Alabama its worst loss in like, you know, well over 15 years, and everyone else in the conference looks great and on the up and up, and then in the first 3 weeks of the following season absolutely plotzes. The Pac-12 is supposed to be down, and instead, like, they all decide, well, let's go. Stanford's like, nah, I'm gonna pass on that. I'm gonna pass on this whole aggro Pac-12 thing. The SEC can't do anything in unison. No one in the Big Ten can either. There is absolutely, like, when people go, well, are these conferences moving in any direction? No, it's just Brownian motion. It's just random little motes of football, all sort of cast as like into a great soup, moving randomly.
I mean, at this point, the ACC has suffered losses to Kansas, a Maryland team that just lost to Temple, which we haven't even talked about as one of the stupider results of this week, the Citadel, and a West Virginia team that had been shut out, or almost got shut out against Missouri. Like, are there quote unquote good losses on here? Sure. Louisville, you know, was not going to beat Notre Dame, but held their own. Duke was never going to beat Alabama. Florida State, you know, we thought was going to beat Boise State, or we thought was, you know, not going to lose the way they did. Miami held their own against Florida, but Florida doesn't look great. So, like, it's not a good time for the ACC right now. And maybe that doesn't matter. Maybe it's just a matter of, like, Clemson just has to worry about Clemson. But it is going to be very – we should all be prepared to be very tired of talking about conference strength.
One more.
That's an annual thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. One more note on that, by the way, in case like you go, well, what about non-conference losses in the ACC? You're like, well, we do have some teams that are rebuilding. Okay. What do you want those rebuilding teams to do? Listen, bare minimum. Okay. There's things you can't do. There's things you cannot do. Right. What's that thing? You can lose to bad teams in FBS. That's fine. Okay. Like Boston College didn't do that. They lost to Kansas. Go check. Kansas, still an FBS program, mm-hmm. right?
Yep.
You just can't lose to FCS teams. That's the big no-no. And that's a rule. A rule of logic, if you will.
You think that's worse. You think Georgia Tech, first year, new coach, new system, losing to the Citadel in overtime is worse than Boston College losing with, like, they're on what? You're like 8 of Adazio losing badly, getting doubled up at home by a yep. Kansas team that has not been relevant in FBS play, in Power 5 play for, you know, going on 8 years. You think yes. that one, the Georgia Tech loss is that much worse?
Because the Citadel is like an academy school at the FCS level.
The Citadel isn't a good FCS team. Like,
yeah, pain, no.
But they're not, like, they're not really good.
The last time the Citadel did this to anyone, the coach got fired the next morning. It was like in September, y'all. And it was Arkansas. So remember when we go, yeah, man, Arkansas is crazy. People are like, oh, yeah, college football, it's nuts and crazy. No, man.
Didn't they beat South Carolina?
Yeah, they did. Like
they did, yeah. Okay, so
don't do things that South Carolina does.
No.
Yeah.
Don't do that.
Kansas might be a service academy for medical examiners. You don't know.
I mean, like, getting blown out of home by Kansas, that is insanely bad.
It's very bad.
But, like, the Georgia Tech one, to me, you're one of a new thing and whatever. Like, cool. You're the one who decided to overhaul it. You know, that's not a something someone forced on you. You could have maintained the same system, hired a younger guy who would care more about recruiting, who'd care more about defense and all that. It was on you to decide to completely tear everything down and go in a different direction. So, like, all hilarity that happens within that zone is still just as hilarious.
It
there
is.
Will be no adjustments made. Plus,
yeah,
the exact thing you gave up is what beat you.
Yeah.
At home. Like, you're not like you're going to the Citadel to play, although that would be funny. But yeah, at home. You lost at home to that.
To the offense that you discarded.
So I guess what we're saying is congratulations to Clemson on their playoff spot. Lock it in.
I mean, yeah. Yeah, like coming into the season, you know, you'd give them 70, 80, 90%, you know, probability of making the playoff. Yeah. And that probably sounds low. But now, shit.
The biggest challenge remaining in the regular season for Clemson is to, like, go through the charade of this serious press conference. Oh, you know, we prepare for every opponent the same way. Oh, yeah, any team can jump. Yep, absolutely. Yeah, that pile of laundry that's been there for days, hasn't moved. Yeah, we're worried about it. We think it can beat us in football.
That sounds like something Pitt would say sincerely.
Need 2 scores to beat that pile of laundry.
We just can't figure it out.
We regret to inform you that Coach Narduzzi drowned in that pile of laundry.
Just bricked a football off the side of it and was astounded when that didn't phase it.
I would put up
just tried to blast the dirt off the side of it.
Well, one more thing, by the way, Kansas's starting tackles, I would wager that both of them are well over 280 pounds, right? They're right in their left tackle.
Yeah.
Citadel's 240. Like there is no shortage of shame.
Okay, but was there a shot of a lonely Georgia Tech fan reading the newspaper at the end of the game?
No, because they're digital. They would never be.
Yeah, he'd be on that abacus.
Point Boston College.
That's your point.
I love that. Honestly, I love that dude, because I love that dude. He was like, you know what? I said I was going to get out of the house. I said I wasn't coming back till the end of the game, and I'm goddamn sticking to it.
Goddamn. Marie told me to get out. Told me to get some fresh air. I'm going to stay out here. She and that terrible dog. I can sit inside. I'll be over here.
Fucking dog.
Got to pop myself right here.
They really talk like that.
Are we playing the Chiefs? Jesus.
The fucking Jayhawks. Where the fuck is Kansas?
Fuck off, Pat Mahomes!
Yeah.
There are like, to me, there are no shortage of...
I'm kidding. If they were playing Pat Mahomes, there'd be a racial slur involved.
There's no shortage, by the way, of like acceptably interesting things about this week. Like Big Nude Saturday. Big Nude Saturday for me is like, hey, man. Everything was at least a B or a B plus story wise, right?
If like you can go
I got one exception.
B graded a B plus from top to bottom. You're doing great.
Wait, Holly,
what's the exception? What is that exception?
I would like to turn your attention to the Shutdown Fullcast Reddit. to user Singy Ben, who went to Indiana Ohio State on Saturday,
a game that was not at all competitive.
And I'm just well.
Au contraire.
Well, there was some competition at halftime. I'm going to refer now to Ben's notes. We had a TV timeout early in the first half. They then proceeded to bring out some folding tables and chairs into the end zone, maybe 5 to 10 yards from the line of scrimmage, and announced that we're about to have a shrimp cocktail eating contest in Bloomington, Indiana. They started this late and proceeded to have the contest abruptly end early with approximately 15 to 20 people, contestants, officials, cheerleaders, all running off with various chairs, tables, goblets of shrimp, and the tablecloth in 10 different directions while the officials bark at them to clear out.
So not even at halftime, in the middle of the fucking game.
This is one loathed idiot in the athletics or marketing department, right? Idea, right? Like, we'll put out a shrimp cocktail. It's so Indiana. It'll be great. Let's just get it out there. We'll go.
So you know how, like, every bad Pac-12 and Big Ten team, they're like, someday we're going to make it to the Rose Bowl. Someday. I think this is Indiana just facing facts and like, someday we're going to make it to the Outback Bowl. It's a Bloomington Onion.
Home field apparel, if you're listening, can you just go ahead and print the University of Iodine Poisoning shirts now? Thank you.
Oh, thank you, God.
I just see them like, I just see somebody like Ohio State rolling
what
in.
What does your stomach even feel like after just like
wolfing like, down a like bunch a of shrimp in the end
it's
zone?
Just like a loaf of shrimp inside you.
I just thought some linemen like
pressed into...
Oh, I really need some mayo in there.
This is all I can think about.
Some lineman, like, blocking and landing in the end zone. He goes back and he's like, man, what's that smell? Like, this Ohio State lineman just pulls out, like, a shrimp and he's like, well, I'll be switched.
Delicious.
Delicious. Thanks, buddy. Oh, just put that in the pantheon.
Oh, wait, sorry, update. Sauce was optional, but strongly encouraged, also appeared to be in an off-brand solo cup directly in front of the goblets of shrimp.
Sure.
Wow.
Everyone had one rather large sharing appetizer-sized goblet. Looked like 6 to 7 contestants, but maybe as many as 10 for as bad as the infield camera work was. Since it was a 2-minute burst, you'd have to be like a German shepherd to get through one of those goblets in the theoretical 2 minutes they thought they had.
Were the shrimp peeled? Do we know that?
Oh, I'm going to ask Ben.
Yeah, okay. Ask Ben if they were peeled. If not, I just want to know the person who was like, hell with it. Tail won't kill me. Arr! It's got to be the whole shrimp cocktail.
Oh, God, imagine the smell on that end of the field the next time it rains when it's just like shrimp tails. They're making stock down there in the end zone.
I mostly like knowing that the way this came about was on Thursday, somebody in the IU marketing department was like, hey, did we figure out the like game we're going to play?
Just have a TV timeout. People are in the stadium and you already got their money. Even if they leave, you already have their money.
What if they just had a lot of shrimp they had to unload?
What they did is whoever was responsible for this was like, ah, fuck. Ah, jeez. Yeah, I got that figured out. I just got to run to the grocery store real quick to get lunch for an unrelated reason. And he just picked whatever was on sale first. And he was like, yep, solo cups and shrimp cocktail.
Manager special shrimp.
Great idea, Lewis. dragging a folding table and spilling shrimp everywhere as the refs yell at you. Great idea, Lewis.
I just think about these people slowly in the September heat of Indiana, slowly building like an aspic or a galantine of shrimp inside their bodies. And then going back into the stands.
My only regret was that it wasn't like crabs or something where they had to like break them apart with a hammer.
Oh God, that would shower. So, and that would mean, that would almost ensure, like at least shrimp, you can fit them into your mouth hole, right? In theory, if you want to. If you had like a crab situation, then you would guarantee little bits of shell and flesh just kind of scattered all over for, you know, whoever to roll around in. And Ohio State was going to have that end zone for one quarter, so you know that somebody would have touched it.
I just want to say the most Indiana thing possible would be if Indiana's home field became Red Lobster Stadium.
Oh, it is in the shrimp season. Excuse me, where are my manners? I must have left them on the field in Bloomington.
Endless Shrimp is undefeated, though, and that can't have anything to do with Indiana football.